Hello there, and welcome to the Dear Dyslexic podcast series brought to you by Rethink Dyslexia, the podcast where we're breaking barriers and doing things differently. I'm Shay Wissell, your host, and I'm so glad you can join us. I'm a fellow neurodivergent, and I'm coming from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, where I live and work. And I would like to acknowledge and pay my respects to all the tribes across our beautiful country and to all First Nations people listening today. Our podcast was born in 2017 out of a need to give a voice to the stories and perspectives of adults with dyslexia. And our voice has grown stronger year after year. We're now a globally listened to podcast with guests from all around the world. Join us for insightful conversations about living with dyslexia and other neurodivergences across all walks of life. Our special focus is on adult education, employment, social and emotional well-being, and entrepreneurship. We're excited to be bringing you this episode and invite you to like and follow us, or even better, why not leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform? So let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm going to start laughing already because our guest today is so wonderful, and we've actually just spent the first half an hour talking before we even got to press record. But I am super, super excited to have this guest online today, Dana Niger, all the way from the US, who has, I think, so many of the people I end up speaking to on the podcast, we connect through LinkedIn. And I'm pretty sure Dana and I were actually connected from someone else in the US. And we started talking, I think, because I just lost my mum and Dana had shared some of her family experiences with me. And then we've developed, I would say, a collegial friendship over the last year or so around how we could support neurodivergence, just not in Australia, but also in the US from a recruitment HR perspective. And Dana has an amazing company in the US that she will talk to us about. So welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you. So great to be here. Hi, Dr. Wissell.
Thank you. Yes, it's about the title, nothing else.
That's it. That's all it is. It's lovely to be here with you. I really appreciate you having me.
It's. I feel like we should have recorded the first half of our conversation because we were having such a great chat about what we were going to talk about today.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really exciting to have this conversation with you because before we started recording, I was sharing with you that I'd just been up in New South Wales, so Sydney, talking to the water sector about their skills shortages and how they could be tapping into neurodivergent employees. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you work in this space and what you see are some of the challenges? Because here we're seeing this big skills work shortage at the moment. Is that reflecting in the US right now?
It is, yes. It is, absolutely. So about 15 to 20% of the population in the world, but also in the United States, identifies as neurodivergent. And this includes the top 10% of people who are diagnosed with dyslexia, which I found interesting in the beginning of our relationship, you and me, Shay, because you were expressing to me that the numbers are actually statistics-wise very similar in Australia to the United States, where autism and ADHD are actually only 1% to 2% of the population, whereas dyslexia is a much higher percentage at 10%, which is also very similar here in the United States. And yet, between the United States and Australia, there is very little being done to express all the different ways that HR teams and just people in general can help support the neurodivergent community.
Yes. And I think that sometimes I feel that the US is so much further ahead in what you're doing compared to what we're doing.
Yeah.
But what have you seen? So a lot of your work is in the engineering kind of construction space.
Yes.
And so what are you seeing at the moment coming through in the neurodivergent kind of with a neurodivergent lens at the moment?
Yeah. So we are Hive, like a beehive, talent acquisition firm, Hive talent acquisition firm out of Greater Metro Atlanta, Georgia in the United States. And we are HR consultants. We are Black-owned, woman-owned, minority-owned, a DBE and a government contractor. We are very proud of all of that. And we tend to work with small to medium-sized businesses, similarly labeled, that don't yet have internal HR or legal. And so we act as their HR director and talent director. And we come in, and one of the many things that we notice right away in most situations is there is a significant lack of training, a significant lack of understanding of the general employees and what they are either diagnosed with or undiagnosed with. Now, we don't cross lines and make people feel uncomfortable, right? Because legally, if someone does not choose to disclose, then that is their right, right? However, in the engineering space, and Hive has a specialty in transportation engineering specific to roads, bridges, highways, traffic, infrastructure related, engineers of civil engineering backgrounds, environmental engineering backgrounds, a few different ones there, geospatial, you name it, from that perspective. And also adjacent, like you mentioned, into construction and construction management, also utilities and utilities management, to include water and wastewater, for example. So a lot of the things that you actually touch on and just mentioned, we see on a daily basis. And so to answer the start of your question there, I would say there is a very unique gimmick, if you want to call it that. I don't really know what else to say. And there's probably a specific term that you can help me with as the expert, that we've noticed here in the United States from the perspective of within the community of neurodivergency, we see that there are two schools, a school where people are utilizing neurodivergency and possibly even over-romanticizing it from a superpowers perspective. And these are great people that you need on your team because of this. And the other side of that, which is also valid, is the fact that if we over-romanticize, hyper-romanticize neurodivergent traits as something wonderful, we are in fact downplaying the fact that these people are suffering and they really need assistance and ADA required rules, et cetera, to keep them not only employed, but I think you and I have discussed this locally to you in Australia. There's a significant work shortage right now. People are really suffering as far as the economy. That is not the case right now here in the United States, but that is a problem regardless, anywhere that you are in the world. And that is a challenge to overcome, especially as an HR consultant.
And so do you feel, I've got two questions. I'm going to say them so that they don't drop out of my head. Do you feel that, or have you seen that once the right workplace adjustments are in place, then a lot of those difficulties that someone might feel are then reduced so that they can work to the best of their ability? And then it's not so much the superpower and narrative, which that's what we got caught up on before we started to record. But it's more around their capabilities and capacities to do the job once they've got those workplace adjustments in. That's my first one. And the second one is, do you see a skewed amount of certain neurodivergences being employed? Because we make this assumption that those that are autistic are really good at engineering. So do you see a high prevalence rate of a certain type of subgroup under the neurodivergence as well? Sorry, I had to get those out before I forgot them. I should have written them down.
No, that's fine. I'll try to stick with them as best I can. You help me out, okay? So to answer the second question, is easy. It's no, I have not yet noticed any sort of trend associated with a higher level of hiring of neurodivergent people, especially within engineering, because supposedly they're better engineers, right? I have not noticed that trend yet. Will data come out on that in the United States? Potentially, but it is still too soon. And I'm not sure who's collecting that data, right?
So do you collect that if you place someone in a job role or within an organization? Do you do any employee profiling around, do you identify as being neurodivergent? And if so, what is your neurodivergence? Do you do any of that at the moment?
It depends on the company, right? If the company is privately owned and they choose not to do that, that is actually, you know, to their, I don't want to say advantage, but it's within their right to not do that. Also, because of laws as far as HIPAA in the United States, we don't talk about things that are not diagnosed, right? So everyone who works in a general, typical, whatever corporate American setting, whether it's a public company or private company, has the right to withhold that information if they don't feel comfortable, right? So it's a very challenging way to try to gain those statistics. And the answer is no. I do not, and none of my clients ask me to try to what's the word I'm looking for? I guess try to collect that data. Now, the way that we get into it, though, is a wonderful way. It is backwards to, you know, A to get to the elbow kind of situation, but it is a wonderful way of getting to it because so many things are helped along the way from the perspective of HR coming in, developing training around neurodiversity, and making sure that that training is constant, continuous, and smooth, right? So I will say our clients who have gotten on our training plans and are training once a quarter and at least once a year on neurodivergency, they are making strides. That is a number. And those are statistics that we do keep from the perspective of how many times have you gone through this training? What has been the percentage of positivity around said training? Are people getting back to you? And what is the percentage of people within that company, you know, that have identified as and have come out as a neurodivergent, right? Then I can start developing that information. And I can tell you right now with that information, it's probably obvious, but I'll say it out loud anyway. The companies that invest in the training of their people to understand the differences in neurodiversity within the workplace help tremendously for an overall culture, as well as collaborative interactions with each other. Because the reality there is, if someone is ADHD on the team and needs you to break down a long deadline into smaller tasks in between, that is going to get you a better end result from that neurodivergent ADHD person than it would a different person who does not suffer from ADHD or a neurodiversity, for example. And I think the key there to understand is different levels of leadership training as well. And I've talked a lot, so I apologize.
No, because I asked you another question inside all those other questions. And it's really great to hear because we're not collecting that type of data too. And I wonder if it's, you know, you have to be psychologically safe. And it is kind of reverse engineering, isn't it? You need to go in and say, we know this is a problem. We don't feel we're a problem, but it's a problem the organization doesn't know that we're there as a starting point. And so then that problem has ramifications because then they don't know what type of support we need because we're not feeling psychologically safe to ask for that support. So I think if you start with that training and that's a consistent training approach, then you start to create that psychological safety where people go, okay, this is language that's used. People know what it means. I feel okay to say it. And then, yeah, then you are collecting the data, but it is hard because in our over here, you can tick a box. I have a disability.
Right.
Now I have never in my life ticked that box to say during a recruitment process that I have a disability.
And why? So, why wouldn't you do that out of curiosity? Tell everybody.
Because I am terrified that I might lose my job within the first 6 months. So we have a probationary period where in the first 6 months you can be terminated regardless of anything and you're not protected. And so I've lost my job before because of my dyslexia. So I'm terrified of identifying straight away that I'm different, that I'm going to need support. Because in interviews, I've actually said when they say, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Such a silly question. Really, I have said I need some extra support with my writing. So then they offered me the job role, but at a lower pay than was advertised because they wanted to see how much support I would need. And after my 6 month probationary period, and they realized it wasn't a lot of support, they put me on the advertised pay. But then when I disclosed to that manager, they turned around and said, well, I knew something was wrong with you. Something wasn't right.
See, these are all things legally that cannot be said in the United States, that you would absolutely have what's called an EEOC claim here and potentially a personal lawsuit. So these are all things that most smart, anyway, organizations within the United States would avoid like fire, right?
Yeah, and they shouldn't be doing it here. But as a young person needing a job, or any person, if you're unemployed or you're job seeking, and you really need that job, you know, what do you do? You're kind of backed into a corner and you've got to say, okay, well, this work culture isn't great. I mean, now I wouldn't accept that. I would say a lot. Right. But I think at the time I was in my late 20s, early 30s. You know, I had a mortgage of my own, so I needed this job. So sure. I didn't really have a choice. I didn't feel I had a choice at the time, but you're right. And over you could easily I shouldn't say easily, it's not easily to take an organization to court, but there, you know, there could be ramifications if you were to report that here as well. But it's very hard to demonstrate that it's been, you know, discrimination. But that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't tick a box, is because, or I would disclose in that first 6 months in a job when I was younger, because I wanted to make sure I secured that job role and that I wasn't treated differently for the wrong reasons.
So the reality of what you just said, and that I also heard, is the numbers and statistics that we have out there now all over the world, not just in the US and not just in Australia, are clearly skewed and not accurate, because there are plenty of people out there who are not checking those boxes and have no intention of ever checking those boxes, right? And that's important to bring up.
Well, that's what my research found. I think 38% wouldn't disclose, but in their working career, within one job, they did not disclose at all because they did not feel safe. So when we did the sample, it was in within their current role would they be disclosing, but they all said within a job at a certain point in their career they wouldn't tell anyone, and they would hide it. So the psych safety part is really important. And I mean when I first started the foundation, neurodivergence wasn't even a topic 10 years ago, and now now I would feel much better to say I'm dyslexic. Maybe not in a job interview still, but it's a bit hard for me now. I'm extremely exposed. If someone's going to hire me, they're going to clearly know I'm dyslexic.
That's right.
But, it does demonstrate that change is occurring, but it is very slow.
Yes. And the reality of that is change is slow everywhere in the world, from, you know, a less developed part of the world, perhaps even into Australia and the United States, right? And I think one of the challenges that neurodivergent groups face in the work environment is just what you said, the culture, the aspect, how long it takes to make change. And I hate to say this, but change is coming. It is just, in fact, slow. People like you are doing great work. When we can partner internationally with people like me and others out there to get the word out, to express how important this information is, but also training on this information, that's going to be key. It's going to be important to get all the different size companies out there, from solopreneurs all the way into, you know, 24,000 plus employee type, you know, large multinational, you know, companies, to understand that constant and consistent training of your people is going to develop a culture of humans who are accepting of others, right? And wanting to make people feel welcome regardless of what they suffer from or don't suffer from, for that matter. I'm kind of tired of the whole trend or fad of things popping up and people delving into it, but then nothing really changing, right? And I'm sure you are as well. It would be great if neurodivergencies actually became a trend, so that people could feel more comfortable, and around the world there could be groups, not just on Facebook, but, you know, all kinds of social media and all kinds of LinkedIn and networking type, you know, groups where neurodivergent people can get together and help each other feel supported. But at the same time, do you feel comfortable in this day and age with that sort of exposure, right? Does it affect your work environment or future work environments, for that matter? And that is the problem that we are running into in human resources. It's quick to be able to do a Google search on someone before, for example, a hiring, right? The pre-onboarding. And you Google search them and you find all these terrible things on their social media, to include, you know, and air quotes, right? Oh, they look like they might be, or they're identifying as neurodivergent. Well, I can't hire that person now. I mean, that happens every day.
Mm, yeah.
It's disgusting, but it's out there.
At Rethink Dyslexia, we are doing things differently. As a global leader in creating inclusive environments for adults with dyslexia, our commitment is to provide individuals with opportunities to live healthier, happier, and more connected lives. Through our range of tailored services, including coaching, learning and development programs, consultancy, and training, we're helping dyslexic individuals, businesses, and organizations to better understand and support their dyslexic employees. So if you're looking for insights, inspiration, and expert advice on dyslexia and how you can provide inclusive practices and environments, then head to rethinkdyslexia.com to find out more or book your free consultation today.
It is out there. And I mean, there are a lot of groups that I know for some dyslexics that, well, actually a lot of dyslexics that contact me, I say, oh, we've got to close Facebook group. I don't do Facebook. And a lot of them won't do it because of the repercussions of not being able to read and write properly. But yes, that's why, you know, it took me years. I don't even know if I actually say directly I am dyslexic on my LinkedIn page. I mean, it's very obvious. But I don't know. I might say I have lived experience now, but I never used to. But there was another point you made and I should have written it down. Not about the training. So what I find, going back to the training, because my research found that significant lack of training around how to work with and support neurodivergent employees. Mm-hmm. But what I find is I go into meetings and we have these great conversations. And then at the end they say, so we have no budget, but can you come and do this for free? So how do we start to encourage or inspire organizations that if you see it as a problem, whether it's work skill shortage, whether, you know, your retention issues are having retention issues with your employees, mm-hmm. you've got a problem or you don't know your staffing profile. So you've got this workplace problem and then you're made aware of what that problem is, but then you say, well, that's great. Well, I don't have the money, but could you please come and do it for free? The amount of people that ask me to come and do stuff for free for them, and not just do it for free, but record it. So they've got it recorded so that they can use it as training. How do we get organizations to actually value the type of work that we're trying to do to see that this is actually going to make a positive impact in your workplace?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I'll say it now. So for the whole world, right? Every organization out there should have a budget associated with training. This should be the new age that we step into. And whether that budget is associated with HR or accounting or wherever you want it to come from, right? There should be a budget set aside and you should have a significant amount of money in that training, depending on how many people you have in your company, right? And the reason being simply because if you don't invest in training your people will leave, your people will think nasty, naughty, terrible things about you. And you have nothing to show for hiring these people. All in all, you would hope that no matter the size of the organization, anyone coming through it, you want them to have a positive experience there. And I know you can't control a lot of different things from a certain level in executive leadership or C-suite, but the reality is everything starts with executive level and C-suite and it trickles downhill. So if you can get C-suite involved in understanding, and the only way that we're going to do that is continually talking about things like this together, right? Continually getting this stuff out there and expressing that an HR professional does feel very strongly, and many others in my group and my network do as well, that training and budgets associated with training will only improve the quality of not only your branding, which we all know is not how you see yourself as an organization, it's rather how others on the outside see your organization, right? And this is all a major time investment as well. So it's not just money, it's also the time investment. And change does not happen overnight, unfortunately. You and I were kind of laughing about that in our pre-conversation from the perspective of, well, how long has it taken for you to, you know, identify this problem and then develop this data? Well, my entire career, right? And I've been doing this for over 20 years now. Now I've only owned my own HR consulting firm for 8, but regardless, within that 8 years of experience, my business partner and I have definitely come to the conclusion and have real data on the significance of training and what it brings to a culture, the value add to individual employees and teams and collaboration. And let's be honest, with the generations after Generation X, and I mean zero disrespect by this, but millennials, Xennials, and alphas, we have now recorded the most anxiety-ridden human beings ever so far in life in our world. And it's probably not going to be getting any better anytime soon. These people need help and support to feel psychologically safe in their work environments, as you so eloquently said earlier. And part of that is going to come from training. And the trainings that are necessary these days are all the different levels of leadership training, which includes the operational backgrounds in various sized companies, but also leadership training for new leaders. There's so many new leaders out there who say the same thing all the day, every day. I can tell you, and you'll laugh, and we've laughed already. You know, oh, I want to lead people, I want to manage. Well, that's great that you want that title and that money, but are you willing to put in the time and effort to actually manage people? Because it's not just telling people what to do at all, right? And to be a great leader these days, we have to not be control freaks and allow others to take control of their own projects, right? And come up with their own ideas and execute them. In turn, we have to be there for conflict resolution, which is incredibly challenging for a lot of people. And the idea of conflict alone or confrontation these days, especially with all of this anxiety, is unheard of. People are like, nope, I don't want to do that. So I think that answers your question. And the budget should come and should become a thing soon, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully. And I mean, in Australia, we're lucky we've got the job access funds. And so that's normally our opening into organizations. But it takes a couple of conversations for them to understand the concept that they're able to utilize funds to help with training and one-on-one support for a neurodivergent employee, and that we can deliver and support that for them. And that they can pool that funding if they've got a lot of neurodivergence to do real big pieces of important work. Mm-hmm. So they don't, it is not such a significant outlay, but it just, the amount of times people say we don't have budget is just like, I think, well, that's not a priority for you then if you don't have the budget.
That is correct. It's definitely not a priority if you're not prioritizing budgeting for training, right? And I do think that's going to be the new budget item that people are going to be spending more time on. The reality is, you know, as economies all over the world ebb and flow, et cetera, and you take in all the other considerations into what affects an economy, large corporations, small corporations, medium-sized corporations, everybody's always going to be trimming the fat. Everybody's always going to be trying to figure out where they can spend less money in order to look like they're making more money. That's just how budgets work. If you take into consideration the size of your company and realize that a training budget is going to be necessary for all the internal problems that you're having, you won't have as many problems moving forward. Granted, it'll probably take you 5 to 10 years to make that transition, but haven't you already invested enough? Aren't you willing to, right? So it's a logic problem and probably a little bit of a cultural problem, depending on the country and the region of the world that you're in.
Yeah, because becoming a manager is not, I think the conflict resolution, the conflicts management is so hard. And I love Brené Brown's work around having brave conversations. So when we run training, part of it at that manager level is how do you have those brave conversations to say, we know something's not working for you. And that's okay. We want to help you to see what we can do to make it work for you. But it's being able to know it's okay to have that conversation as a manager. That's part of your job, to have those brave conversations, say something's not right.
Absolutely. It's imperative. As a manager, it's imperative to relate to your people, to get to know them and understand them as much as they're willing to let you, right? It's not so much from the perspective of, let me in, I'm dying to get to know you, right? And that's a little scary for some people, right? And then there's the other side of it. There's the people who want to let you in and they want to do, but they don't necessarily need that. And that's okay too, right? All the different aspects of a human being need to be taken into consideration. And I think, as we spoke about before, the over-romanticizing and comparison of neurodivergent people and the community to superpowers can be incredibly detrimental to these people, right? It is important to understand that various grant programs, various scholarships, fellowships, et cetera, can be measured on certain aspects of that. But if you play with that the wrong way, you can really lose sight of what the goal is. And the goal is to help these people, not to harm these people. And so, of course, nothing is meant, no disrespect meant to those who maybe have been accidentally or think it's cool or whatever the case may be, hyper-romanticizing neurodivergent people and their superpowers. But I think there are other ways to look at it that are far more important, especially for the future of these people in our workforce.
Yes. And I mean, I won't get on my bandwagon. For those that have listened to lots of my podcasts, they know I don't like the term superpower. And I can't wait for our paper to finally be published around labeling But yes, I think it comes back to the original question around when we put workplace adjustments in, like how does that then how do we build people's capabilities and capacities? And yes, someone will have, like we all have strengths in the workplace, and we've come from a strength-based approach, trying not to come from a deficit approach. But even within our strengths, we're still going to have areas that we're not as strong in. So it's how do you build those teams to match those strengths rather than saying, okay, so you're autistic, so you're going to be really good at process and you're going to be really good at fine detail, and you're dyslexic, so you're a big problem solver. So, you know, you're not allowed to do anything else because they're your superpowers. But in actual fact, not everyone is a big picture thinker, and they're not all autistics are fine detailed and, you know, get fixated on something. But there are certain traits that we have that that create difficulties for us.
Yeah.
You know, like we might not be flexible in thinking, and that's a trait of our difficulty, or we can't spell, that's a trait of our difficulty or our difference. And so they're the things that need to be supported in the workplace. I think my original question to you was around, when have you seen accommodations work well when you've worked with a neurodivergent employee or placed them into a job role? Because I think that's all we've got time for. We're sticking to half an hour.
Well, it's a great way to end on a positive. I love that, because the path that we were going down into being pigeonholed in a workplace and stereotyped was certainly negative, right? So yes, positive. So on the daily basis, and I do not mean to stereotype here, but I do happen to work in transportation engineering as a specialty. So I work with engineers of different levels and experiences most days. And there are quite a few clients of mine that have quite a few neurodivergent employees. And I will say that one of the best situations that we've had is a people manager, newer people manager going through a training with us right now, came to us in a one-on-one session saying, I'm so confused. I'm so frustrated. All I want to do is help this individual on my team. And I can't seem to break into a good conversation with this person. We're both walking on eggshells. I seem just very frustrated individual. And when we got this person to calm down and express to us that all I really want to do is help, I don't know where to start. When I asked this person what their employee has a concern with, right? This person expressed that the employee who reports to this person, sorry. So there's a relationship there with a manager and employee. Reports this person and was honest with them and said, listen, I suffer from ADHD. Okay. You don't need to tell anybody else, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you. It is very challenging for me to listen to you give me a deadline and just say, run with it. For me, when I get up in the morning and I make a cup of coffee, you might be thinking, oh, okay, it's a task. I've made a cup of coffee. But for me, I have to go downstairs. I have to open the cabinet. I have to pick my mug. I have to make my coffee, pick my creamer, mix the creamer in. And this is how this person explained this to their manager. And the manager, they said, was just very overwhelmed by all of that, right? That was anxiety that this person did not understand. And so they brought it to us in a training session and said, I probably overwhelmed this person because they were dragging me through their anxiety, is how this person felt. So we explained, you're right. They had a moment, a vulnerable moment where they were explaining something to you. And because you don't suffer from that kind of anxiety, you now understand what that feels like. It's my heart wrenched. And I said, you got a little tight in the chest? Yeah. I said, I understand. I too actually have struggled and worked very hard my entire career to understand people who suffer from anxieties, because I really don't. I never have, right? I haven't taken any medications for that. I've never been diagnosed with any of that. So empathy is the most important tool there. And this person expressed empathy by coming to us and saying, help me help my employee. The way that we helped is we expressed to this person with ADHD, the fastest way to be able to bond with someone is instead of just giving a deadline and saying, this is due then, good luck with the project. You break the project down into teeny tiny wins along the way, much smaller details, right? It's not, we have a project on a road, it's due March 31st, go. It's, We have a project on a road. It's due March 31st. I want to meet with you three times in between. And this is what I'm going to expect with each meeting. You may even have to break it down smaller than that. And you may have to express within the first meeting, we're going to do this, 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 and this. So prior to that, you're going to want to have this, 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 and this ready to go. Now, that may seem to some people like you're literally doing their work for them. You're not. You're not doing the work. You're developing a plan. And internally, what's happening there is you two are bonding. You may not realize it in that moment, but that collaborative aspect of you breaking down the overall deadline into much smaller deadlines and thus providing this ADHD employee little wins along the way helps increase their positivity, helps increase how they feel generally in life and that they are positively affecting others. And also by giving someone little wins is positive reinforcement, right? Which every single one of us needs, let's be honest, as a human.
And I think it's that reward for some people with ADHD, that little dopamine hit of a reward. Yes, I've ticked that off. Even if it's a list, yes, I've ticked that off. And that dopamine is part of what helps them to keep going and to help stay focused. So that's a really great strategy for people that are listening. I think it's great timing that we need to wrap up because all of a sudden there's drilling outside my house.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
If you didn't hear it, that's good.
I honestly can't, but I did see that you muted and I was like, it must be raining really hard or something.
Well, the rain was starting to come down. I'm like, I don't want to mute that because it's such a nice sound when you haven't had it. And it's so bad because up north of Australia, they've had major, major floods and cyclones for the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. And then we've had bushfires, not as bad as we normally do, though, but it still has been traumatic for some communities. So to have some rain, it's like, yes, because the garden is dying and we don't like to water the garden, like the more established garden, because we don't want to be wasteful. And my husband works in water. So we make sure, you know, we're very water conscious. Nice to hear some rain. But I think that was a really positive way to end, because I know that we could probably have a couple, like a series of conversations around how we can support individuals that are neurodivergent. And then we're going to have you on our other podcast, The Hobo CEO, to talk about your book and all the wonderful things you do as a woman in business. And so that's a whole different story. But for those that are listening, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. It's one that we're hoping to have more and more of around HR and workforce solutions as well. And if you want to learn more about Dana and all her work, you'll find out more about her on the website. And stay tuned for the Hobo CEO podcast, where we'll have Dana on to talk about her book and a whole different side to us both, I think, a more personal side, I think, rather than just professional around business development. So thank you, Dana. I'm so glad we've finally been able to catch up. It's been a long time. And stay well in the US. And for everyone listening, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
If you haven't done so already, make sure you sign up to our mailing list so you can keep up to date with everything we are doing at Rethink Dyslexia. So head to rethinkdyslexia.com.au. And don't forget, if there's anything you heard today that was distressing, you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36. Thanks for listening and bye for now.